Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Histories of the Unexpected, the show in which we explain how everything has a history, even the most unexpected of subjects, like aardvarks, pots, and blubber.
Oh, blubber would make a brilliant top exam. However, we'll be following the links in our minds as we come across them, explaining how those histories link together in unexpected ways. Who knew, for example, that the history of fruit eating is all about medicine and Tudor society, or that the history of keys is all about female power in the Viking world?
The man not sitting opposite me who will help pilot us through these micro-histories is one of the country's leading professors of history. It's Professor Extraordinaire James Daybell. Hi, James.
Hello, Sam. And the man not sitting opposite me but ably helping me co-pilot these episodes is the famous historical adventurer, Dr. Sam Willis.
This is the third of our special Christmas-themed micro-histories in which we embrace the task of demonstrating how an unexpected subject not only has a history but is massively important and interesting in just 15 minutes, and we do it without just speaking faster. We will start with a shared example, then have just 5 minutes each to make a case for an interesting history on that very unexpected subject. Contributions are rigorously timed.
And you, dear listeners, will get to vote on social media on what you think was the most interesting fact you heard today.
Today's topic is the fabulously artistic history of shoes. Right, James, where are we going to start?
Well, we are going to start with shoes as a deterrent for evil sprites, Sam.
We explained in our Christmas micro-history podcast on the history of evil how shoes were used as a noxious deterrent for evil sprites at Christmas time. You'd burn your stinky shoes to stop evil beings coming down the chimney. But shoes were also a precursor to the customary stockings that we have now as receptacles for Yuletide gifts. Earlier depictions of St. Nicholas do associate him with dropping gold coins down the chimney, which in 16th century Holland led to the tradition of children placing their shoes on the hearth on the eve of the Feast of St. Nicholas, waking up in the morning to find them filled with presents and sweets.
Oh, that makes me want to put an enormous pair of Wellington boots by the fire as a receptacle
for
candy.
The biggest shoes ever.
So, in Italian folklore, an old woman named Befana, who sometimes is referred to as the Christmas witch, delivered gifts to children on the eve of Epiphany, the 6th of January, slipping them into their shoes that the children had left by the fireplace. Now, these earlier chimney-related European traditions no doubt passed into usage in the United States through patterns of migration as people left Europe and went over to America. And the spread of Christmas traditions then is, of course, intimately linked with the spread of people around the globe. And this is, of course, what led to those traditions associated with Father Christmas coming down the chimney. Now, there we are, but it's not all about, that's not the only meaning and reading of shoes historically, is it, Sam? Where are you going to take us?
I am going to go to the French Revolution. I thought it was the finest place to do that. So France in the 1790s, for a bit of fascinating shoe history, more broadly wrapped up in a bit of fashion history. I want to set the scene. This is a quote from Antoine.
I need to count you down. I need to count you down, Sam.
Oh, you do. Okay, ready?
Okay, so I'm going to be very strict on the 5 minutes this time. On your marks, get set, go.
Right, so going to France in the 1790s for a fascinating bit of shoe history, more broadly wrapped up in a fascinating bit of fashion history. Let's set the scene here. This is from writings of someone called Antoine Bernave, who's a lawyer from Grenoble who became a prominent revolutionary and was executed during the Reign of Terror. He writes his memoirs while he's waiting for execution, so knowing he's going to die. He just comments about the state of France. Conditions in France were ripe for a democratic revolution when the unfortunate Louis XVI ascended the throne. The government's actions favoured its explosion. The two privileged orders who still retained control of the government were ruined through their taste of luxury and had degraded themselves by their way of life. The third estate, in contrast, had acquired enormous wealth. The people were restrained only by their habit of servitude and the limited hope they had of breaking their chains. The government had succeeded in containing this hope, but it had nevertheless flourished in the heart of the nation. For royal power to have remained intact in such circumstances would have required a tyrant or a great statesman on the throne. Louis XVI was neither. He was too well-intentioned not to try to remedy the abuses, but he possessed neither the character nor talents to control an impetuous nation in a situation which cried out for reform. So there we have the setup of what was going on in France in the 1790s. He's talking about the Ancien Régime. He mentioned the Third Estate there. You've got the society divided into three. The First Estate, the clergy. The second is the nobility, and the third is the commoners. By far the largest proportion of people are the commoners, and those are the ones that rise up and they force France to change. Well, how did this affect fashion? It affected it in a really, really clear way, because there was a revulsion against the high fashion of the aristocracy, which had becoming more and more extreme since the reign of Louis XIV, known as the Sun King, in the early 1700s, late 1690s, early 1700s. So a really distinctive extravagance associated with royalty and aristocracy. And particularly, it was associated with shoes. Louis XIV particularly had what was known as Louis heels. And he insisted that his heels, they could be as high as 5 inches, were the highest. He also proclaimed that only aristocrats could actually wear heels at all. And he had his coloured a very distinctive red. So they were using shoes to define themselves as aristocrats. They were using as nobles. It became a really interesting focus on French fashion. And that this became a subject of change in the French Revolution. And high heels disappeared. They became associated with the rich and the wealthy, and they were replaced by just like a wedge or a spring heel, a single layer of leather inserted just above the sole at the back of the shoe. Quite a fragile shoe, but much more much less glamorous. The early ones of the 1690s and 1700s, hugely elaborate, with bows, with buckles, with jewellery. Some even had kind of detailed scenes embroidered on them. Some of them still survive in fashion museums today. They're absolutely extraordinary. Now, interestingly, one of the shoes that does survive that makes this point of how shoes changed is a shoe that belonged to Marie Antoinette. She, of course, was the last Queen of France, and she was executed, and it said that she tripped up on her way to the scaffold and she lost her shoe. The shoe then reappeared. It was said that it was picked up by someone, one of her supporters, and passed down through the family. It was given to the Musée des Beaux-Arts in Caen in northern France in the mid-1860s or so. It was first exhibited not long after in the 1880s. Very plain shoe. She was said to wear white. It's the colour of widowhood, because her husband, of course, Louis, had been executed. And she had these very, very plain shoes that make the point of how clothing and shoes in particular changed during the French Revolution. It's interesting, I think, as well, that whether or not the shoe actually is hers has not been decided. But the point is that it was picked up and it survived as a memento, a physical connection between her supporters, the people who loved her, and the woman herself in history, which, of course, is a story you will all have heard in Cinderella. Similar sort of thing. Now, it wasn't just shoes, of course, but all sorts of things changed. Hats changed, clothes changed. What's that, James? I'm being interrupted.
That is, in fact, Public Enemy from their album He Got Game, which was the soundtrack to the Spike Lee movie. It's a track called Politics of the Sneaker Pimps.
Ah, very good, James. Very good indeed. Well, let me just finish up. I can say that shoes, in fact, are all about fanaticism in the French Revolution, about aristocratic privilege at the court of Louis XIV and 15th and 16th, the Sun King, and the execution of Marie Antoinette.
Excellent. Very, very good. Right, my turn.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to start your 5 minutes. Where are we going, James? One, two, three, go.
Well, Sam, we are going to talk about... Let me get my own timer here. We are going to talk about... So that I know. We're going to talk about sneakers and the politics of sneaker pimps. And... this one of the things that you may not know about me, you think I'm a sort of very right and proper professor, but I love rap music and hip hop, and always have done, and listen to it all the time. And one of my favourite groups is Public Enemy, and I have been inspired by their track The Politics of Sneaker Pimps to do a little bit of research around how we think about training shoes, trainers, and the history of trainers. And these have always been, you know, political. It's been political footwear. And there's a brilliant exhibition that was a few years ago in Toronto called Out of the Box, The Rise of Sneaker Culture. And if you think over the last few years how training shoes or sneakers, as they are in America, have come into the public realm, they are innately political. So you think about New Balance trainers and their support of Donald Trump's protectionist trade policies, which led to them being branded by a neo-Nazi group on their blog as the official shoes of white people. I don't know whether you remember this, but there were customers who were just appalled by this. And so they got their very, very expensive New Balance trainers, and then went to town on social media showing all sorts of pictures of what they did with these shoes to discard of them. They flushed them down toilets, they put them in rubbish bins, and it led to the company basically coming out and saying that it made a statement, it does not tolerate bigotry or hate in any form. And then you get Nike coming out a sort of month or so later, you know, basically being all sort of politically correct and basically jumping on the sort of the bandwagon so that they didn't want themselves to be part and parcel of this sort of attack on New Balance style trainers. And so what we have here is that the sense that, in fact, these kinds of shoes, sneakers, have always been a vehicle for political statements. And if you look back at it doesn't have to be sort of in the media like that, but if you look back over history, from their sort of start, they've been around for about 200 years, they have meant all sorts of things about class, about masculinity, about race, about national identity. I mean, take, for example, during the Second World War, just before the Second World War, at the 1936 Berlin Olympic Games. Trainers or sneakers were, you know, were part of a sort of new footwear, democratized footwear, as they became much cheaper. You see them worn by fascist sort of troops training in Germany, Japan, in Italy. But also they are part of resistance. And it's striking to know that Jesse Owens, the very famous sprinter, African-American sprinter, who dominated the 1936 Berlin Olympic Games, almost sort of, you know, ridiculed the Nazi host because he was actually wearing German-made running shoes made by the Dassler company. I think one of the things that we can see is also the way in which sneakers are marketed and merchandise, and they become very, very popular, very expensive. They're connected to basketball, to baseball, and there's a sense in which people want these items. You know, so they want to go out and they want to buy them. And this is often associated with crime. In 1990, in response to the Spike Lee's advert for Nike Air Jordans, there were apparently a string of sneaker killings. So people going out and killing people in order to get hold of their sneakers. And I just wanted to end with a rap against this by Public Enemy. And it's from, it's this Politics of the Sneaker Pimps.
Your 5 minutes is up, James, but I will let you do your rap. These
Excellent.
Are the bells of Notre Dame de Paris.
Oh.
Will encourage you to think about poor old Marie Antoinette losing her shoe on the scaffold. And the fact is, we can't actually hear that noise anymore, can we? Because of what happened to Notre Dame. Anyway, we digress. And James, you're going to finish off with a lovely rap. Go.
On the outs I lace up, the world I face up to score on anybody. It's a war on everybody. The new guys come in bloodshot between the eyes, as long as they sell in that merchandise. Air One, what goes in, don't come back. The colour might be green, but it's also black. And red, I know many heads that spent bloodshed, cursed in Converses, dead in Pro-Keds. Now every Tom, Dick, Harry or Joe Smith skip the Spaldings, ponies, the K-Swiss. High school and college coaches get in dollars with kickbacks and scholarships, them slave ships. Converses for the pros, kids with feelers, Reebok Nikes, Nubox my Adidas, and part of that clique spending all that cheddar on kicks. BS in the politics, politics of them sneaker pimps, politics of them sneaker pimps, politics of them sneaker pimps, politics of them sneaker pimps. Eat your heart out, Chuck D. So there you have it, Sam. Shoes in the form of sneakers are all about political identity in the 20th century.
Oh, that was brilliant. that was amazing. I don't really know what to say about that at all. I hope you have all enjoyed this amazing history of shoes. We've gone from shoes and evil sprites and the precursors of stockings to Marie Antoinette, the French Revolution, and then the sneaker pimps and some 20th century rap music and politics. What an amazing thing, James. Who knew? I hope you enjoyed it. Do please follow us on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Sam Willis.
And I'm at James Daybell, and the pod is at Unexpected Pod. And you can find out everything that we have been up to by checking out our website on historiesoftheunexpected.com.
And that's where you can buy yourself some Christmas books. We're signing the books, we're sending them all out, so please do check out the website and get in touch, and we can do a personally engraved book for all of you or all of your family. We'll be back soon with some more Christmas micro histories. Bye, guys.
Take care, guys.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.